Disappointed. Oh.
Up ahead, look out. Hello, Amari Stoudemire elevates and detonates.
Welcome in, Planeteers. You are here for a very special Suns Planet podcast because we are back in the playoffs. I'm looking for the button. Hold on. Found it. It is right. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We actually did it. And I'll be honest, I'm sure, like a lot of you Suns fans, we're a little bit nervous. One game, winner takes all to get to the playoffs against Steph Curry and Draymond Green, who just have a history of Curry of taking big shots and making big shots, and Draymond Green just frustrating people. Somehow the Suns, every time the Warriors started punching back a little bit and getting the lead down to 2 or 3 points, the Suns would go off and hit a Jalen Green deep fadeaway 3-point shot. Bruce, Jalen Green had a phenomenal game. We're going to talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about the Blazers. We won't be covering the destruction that we gave the Thunder to close the season. But Bruce, how you feeling? Play-in tournament over, Suns grab the last spot.
I mean, I'm just excited. I feel like the fan base would have kind of gone into a wild frenzy if they had lost this game. And that was something that I didn't really want to experience, to kind of come on the show and have to kind of be like, well, the Suns were the first team in history to beat the seventh seed and fall out of the play-in and yada, yada, yada. After such like a positive season that we've had, people are already like trying to pick out the negatives on social media. So I'm just happy that they were able to take care of this game. Like you mentioned, the Warriors are a very fun, electric team, obviously kind of maybe the end of their dynasty with the Steve Kerr quotes from last night's game about potentially returning as a coach. But, you know, Steph tried to get that avalanche going. Just it wasn't enough. And the Suns, like you mentioned, Jalen Green had a really, really good game. And our guy Jordan Goodwin as well was absolutely fantastic in this one. And I love to see it when those types of players really step up and shine for the Phoenix Suns in kind of these big moments, because a guy like Jalen Green, who has had a weird season so far for the Suns, as we know, kind of dealing with injuries and kind of playing good in some performances, looking bad in other ones. I think this was kind of the perfect kind of entrance in the playoffs for him, specifically with these two play-in games, because he was pretty fantastic in both of them.
I am shocked. Color me shocked. Color this kind of, I always think the light gets me weird in this room and I get kind of like a purple haze, auburn haze. But either way, color me shocked, whatever color that would be, that Jalen Green, who had a couple of great games in the regular season but was wildly inconsistent, I think, after those couple of splash games, and, of course, mired with injury for the majority of the season. I mean, how many games has he played roughly with the Suns this year? Less than 20, right? Or maybe close to. That'd be interesting.
Let me check.
Yeah. 32. Okay. Far more than I thought. For him to come in and really try to will us to a win against the Portland Trail Blazers, where he did lead us in scoring, 35 points on 14 of 29 shooting. And then last night, as the Suns do get the win against the Warriors, he led us again in scoring, 36 points on 14 of 20 and 8 of 14 from the three-point line. We were told he's not even a great three-point shooter, and he was just launching them off balance, running to his spots, spot up, deep fadeaway shots, close at midcourt, and just draining them. I'm starting to think, I can't believe he missed that shot to win the game against the Blazers. The way he was shooting last night was phenomenal. We're going to get into that. Let's talk a little bit about the Blazers game that got us there. Yep. We'll focus mostly on the Warriors and kind of moving forward. But that Portland Trailblazer game, Suns fans wanted it. We wanted the Blazers, and we got it in the worst way, unfortunately. It was close, 114 to 110, and it looked, I thought, like we were kind of figuring it out. But all of a sudden, Suns fans started turning against Coach Jordan Otten in a very quick amount of time. I think I saw some people after the Suns win last night say that the true fans stayed loyal, the real fans. Well, I'll say it either way. The Suns fans, we're hanging by threads. We're hanging by threads. And sometimes the thread isn't long enough for some of them, and they're having a hard time. I still think Jordan Otten is a very good coach. But even I was like, wait a minute. Denny Avdija.
Avdija.
He's phenomenal. Let's just put it that way. Yep. Mr. Phenomenal for the Portland Trailblazers. 41 points on 15 of 22 shooting. 3 of 8 from three-point range, 8 of 13 from the line, 7 rebounds, 12 assists. This guy was doing it all for the Portland Trailblazers. And at one point, I believe it was Devin Booker, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, Royce O'Neal, and Jordan Goodwin out there. And we were wondering why Portland's size was giving us problems. We'll get into why it didn't work out the same way with the Warriors in the following game. But that's the one question I did have. I wanted to start with in terms of that Portland Trailblazer game, Bruce. We had a presumably healthy enough Mark Williams. He was able to play over 20 minutes in the game. Also Iguodala. We have Kaman Malawach, a top 10 pick. And where was the rim protection? We were asking people like Jordan Goodwin, hey, jump over 6 inches and then grab the rebound over this guy. It's hard to do that.
It seems like Jordan Ott obviously is going to go deep into his rotation if there are injuries played, but he kind of has this like set rotation for the playoffs. And for the Suns, how it's kind of currently constructed is a little bit small ballish lineup. Unfortunately for the team, they also were without Grayson Allen, I believe, in the Portland Trailblazers game, which he was listed as available for this Warriors game, but did not play either. So I do think that that like kind of goes into it as well. But like you mentioned, the sheer lack of size for this Suns team is very evident on the court. And it's something that a lot of people have pointed to since the trade deadline. That's why everyone wanted this team to kind of trade for a power forward. But I think the Suns kind of realized that they don't want to break up the chemistry. This team is really gelling together and is having some fun with itself. So they want to kind of experiment with that. And I feel like we saw in the second game with some Haywood Highsmith's 5 minutes and some of that as well.
We're getting into that for sure.
We saw a little bit.
That was a game changer.
We saw a lot of different little lineup changes. And obviously with the Warriors, they are a little bit smaller. So I think it does cater to the Suns in that degree a little bit. But with the Blazers there and what we've seen with teams like the Rockets this year, the Thunder, the Nuggets, is just that their size is just too much for the Suns. And that's kind of what happened with this Blazers game. It also doesn't help that the Blazers, I believe, were like red hot from three when this game first started out. I tweeted about it.
Oh, that first half.
But then that first
half. And we were the iciest of cold. We didn't make a single one in the first half, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah. I think we were outscored like by like 30 or something like that. It was a significant differential in terms of made threes for them in the first half versus us. They did kind of revert to the mean in the third quarter. It looked like things were going to start to get bad. The Blazers, I think, got up about 12, 15 points, if I'm not mistaken. I was like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? We got to start getting back into this game. And we did. And in fact, in the fourth quarter, we took the lead and kind of kept up the pressure. But at that point, it was bully ball and letting Mr. Phenomenal, I'll continue to just call him, just drive. They would get a pick and he would turn the corner and the guy would be a half step behind him. And at that point, you have small guys trying to crash in. Doesn't matter. He's going in hard, and he's going to be able to get whatever he wanted in terms of power shots, getting in ones, going to the free throw line, and we just weren't able to combat that. And then also mention this because this, I don't know if it's a theme. There were some people talking about it in the Warriors game, but a Devin Booker is your best player. Why isn't he dominating, or why isn't he playing like the big star? And it started in this game. It we'll say it continued a little bit in the Warriors game. I disagree with the fans that are saying that. I know on Suns Jam, for example, Matthew was like, I'm over Booker to a degree. Not like that he dislikes him, but that he's like, I'm done kind of like, he viewed him as Dak Prescott for the Cowboys. Like, good, but you don't want to rely on him to carry you. You have to look like at the other players. Matthew was like, I'm watching Jalen Green, and I'm watching some of these other guys. I'm very much in John Voight's camp, where it was like, actually, I think he played exactly how he needed to play to help us be successful against the Warriors. How it was working against the Blazers, you know, it was similar. I'll put it that way. He finished in the Blazers game with 22 points on 7 of 17 shooting, and perhaps most importantly, 8 of 13 from the line. He missed 5 free throws uncharacteristically. But 13 free throw attempts of our 32, that might have been the big story. We missed 9 free throws in this game. The Blazers missed 6. And we ended up, losing by 4 points. Those are big difference makers when your best guys are missing free throws. Let's start with that one. We talked a little bit about kind of Coach Ott and his decisions and his rotations. It's not that I would say – I would almost hesitate to say that we were playing small ball. If you look at the minutes played, Mark Williams had over 22 and Oso, I believe, had 23. That's almost a full 48 minutes of center playing, but there was moments that are so clear when there's a 6'8", 6'9", 7-footer on one team driving into the paint and you're throwing a 6'5" guy at him, which reminded me of my childhood because I went to a Catholic private school, and then we'd play the public schools, and we had a class, a graduating class of like 100, and they had a graduating class of like 1,000. So they would have guys that were like 6'8", and our center was like 6'4" because he was just the biggest in our class. So it's just not easy for the big guys, the supposed bigs. Like Royce O'Neal was basically playing center for us a little bit in spots. You know, I was kind of committed to that. And then and Booker, Green, and Brooks, I mean, he went hard with those guys over Brooks played the least, just over 36 minutes. Green just under 39. Booker just over 38 minutes. So we're going to ride or die with our three best players. And Book, like I said, threw in 4 assists. It wasn't the impact I think that people were expecting. What's your overall kind of takeaway? Your grade on Book, and do you think the fans are right to be a little concerned?
I feel like they have the right to be a little concerned, just due to the fact that he is, I guess, like the homegrown star player, and like what everyone is gonna say is like, because of the fact that he got his extension last offseason, like you can tell when someone doesn't watch the Suns or knows the Suns when they're like, but he's making $70 million. He absolutely sucks. Like it's just funny.
King Nacho will always are one of our favorites. Will always let us know dollar value and impact on the game. Although he's actually kind of unsurprisingly picking on Oso and Dunn at the moment, but But Book, Nacho, I'm curious where you fall on the Booker. Let us know in the chat. But yeah, Bruce, I mean, I think you're right. Keep going with your point. Yeah, I think some people are, if they're kind of a casual fan, they're looking at it like, I was told Booker's your best player.
Yeah, exactly. And like, obviously, he has to step up in these moments, right? Like when we go to Oklahoma City and we take on the Thunder, I'm not expecting the Suns to win that series, right? But I'm expecting them to make it a series, right? Not to get blown out all 4 games, to have some fun. And for Devin Booker, you know, to have some performances where he does drop 30, where he is the leading scorer. But I feel like when the Suns this season had that Devin Booker, Jalen Green kind of tandem working really well, it was against some of these, you know, weaker defenses and going against some of these top teams and now playoff teams that have good defenses, it's going to basically only allow one of them to be really good because teams are going to be sending doubles to the other guard, really making it difficult for the other one. As long as the other guard himself, though, is getting the offense involved and still making plays to help win the team, then I still think it's valuable. And that is where I think you and kind of John kind of see with Devin Booker and his play in these last couple of games, where he's still, like, even if he's getting doubled, he's getting blitzed, he's still getting the ball off, still making the right plays, still making the right reads. And even if he's not, you know, the 35-point scorer like Jalen Green, who has this insane efficiency around him, it's because the Warriors are so much taxed on Booker that they're allowing Jalen Green to win the game, right? Like, the Warriors' game plan is, we want Jalen Green to win this game for the
Suns, right?
Not Devin Booker. And I feel like
we will lock up Book, and we will do it, and we will live ride or die with letting Jalen Green go off because he's been so streaky. We've seen this. In March, he would shoot 30%. We're like, what? Does he just need to keep trying to get adjusted? And we saw this a little bit with Brooks, I think, coming into these playing games of, okay, he was the number two option when Green was out. Now he's the number three option.
Yep.
How is he going to assert himself? Man, that guy has no arc on his shot. he reminds me of how I used to play. I used to get so much criticism that I'd shoot laser shots, but somehow they went in, and Brooks does it obviously at a much higher level than I would ever do it. But it's interesting to watch. They're still kind of figuring it out. I get the game plans to be like, you know what, we'll let your streakier shooters like Brooks and Green try and do it. And that's what I think Booker's doing. He's looking at it like a general, man. Like, he's got weapons on the floor. He doesn't have to try and do it all. And honestly, if he does, let me back up a bit, because you know this very well. The Blazers and the Warriors had good defenders, and they were hammering Booker. Always, all the time. in the Blazers, I mean, you've got Drew Holiday, a big-bodied guard. Matisse Thybulle is back in the NBA. Welcome back, Mr. Australia. You've got yourself a role with the Blazers again. Tumari Kamara. The son, the greatest son that never was, all defensive caliber. And then, like I said, we'll talk about the Warriors game, but they were throwing Draymond and Podemski, who, oh my God, I hate that guy. There's something about him that just, he's their Jordan Goodwin on the Warriors, just antagonistic. I forgot. I think it was Royce O'Neal threw a screen and just laid him the hell out. And I saw Scott Foster just go, you ran square into that one, man. But they were throwing big dudes and aggressive athletic guards at Book in both games all the time. And Book was finding open guys. And he was still driving and drawing fouls, helping everyone else try and get to the line too.
Yep. And I think with the Blazers too, like you mentioned, they have those athletes, they have that length, they have that size. And when you're the Suns, who are, like, unfortunately kind of focus into the smaller lineup, right? Like, you got Dylan Brooks at the four starting with three guards. It's a little bit more difficult for a team like that to kind of combat with them, right? And even guys like Shaedon Sharpe, who has been kind of out for a big time for the Blazers, he missed the last 4 to 6 weeks. Like, he came into this game, into the play-in, and he's a little bit of aggressive. He can drive to the rack, right? And Chris Murray, he's kind of deep in their bench, but he's a good, solid defender.
Jeremy Henderson Grant, had who finally came back. Yeah.
And Jeremy Grant, too. Like, Jeremy Grant was hitting corner threes left and right for this Blazers team. Like, keeping them
good in defender. This Yeah, that's how he got started in the league, was with his defense.
Yep, it was just a tough for the Suns. This was kind of the, like, I know a lot of people wanted the Blazers because it was kind of like which half court was going to dominate a little bit more, and kind of like that was going to be the real game. They don't really have, like, everyone was like, oh, Booker versus Avida is better than Booker versus Kawhi. But the Blazers did have a lot of pieces, like depth-wise and play-style and scheme-wise, to kind of really outplay the Suns here, to kind of give them in this game as well. Like, they dominated the glass. They were playing really hard on defense. And, I mean, you mentioned Denny Avdija. He was driving to the rack, getting a lot of foul calls. as well. There was it going both ways. I would argue as a fan of the NBA that there were a lot of calls in this game, both sides, that were a little questionable. You know what I mean? Where teams were getting some certain stuff. Dylan Brooks, I believe, got a technical foul for clapping or something like that.
Yeah.
But then Denny Avida, like on the replay, was shown yelling at the referee for not getting called an and one, and he was just not given anything. So, like, right. When you have stuff like that kind of taking place as well, it's really hard to be like, all right, like, we, especially with the Suns being so aggressive and feisty and stuff like that, like, it's a little bit hard to be like really mad at them when they lose something like that. But obviously, it was a disappointing loss. But I think some of the fans may have overreacted a little bit to this loss with the fire Jordan Ott kind of campaign going around.
Coming from Coach Bud and Coach, now I'm blanking on
Vogel,
thank you. Frankie V. And we've had you can even go further back than that if you want, but like Ott to me is the most mad scientist of the if you throw him in the last four coaches, I'd say he's the most mad scientist-ish in terms of trying to figure out and create advantages for our team. Whereas Coach Bud's like, yeah, go out there and play random. I'm just playing my starters. Go. And Vogel, he try a couple of things, but not too much. I was always getting frustrated with some of the rotations over the last handful of seasons. I'm not going to fault Ott for trying things that he thinks in a vacuum should work. What I will say that even I was surprised about was in this Blazers game. He went to we played a 9-man rotation, and in that 9-man rotation, Royce O'Neal, Colin Gillespie, and Oso came off the bench, and Ryan Dunn came in and got just over 9 minutes. Now Dunn didn't do much in that time. 2 points, 4 rebounds. He got an assist and a block. It wasn't horrible. What I was interested in was the fact that. That he went with Dunn instead of Rashear Fleming. And I feel like some of the fans, I know Michael P, aka the future becomes the present, has been begging for the rookies to get the shine all season. He was getting so excited when they were finally getting some love in March and April. Your thoughts on going with Dunn in a play-in game instead of Rashear?
Dunn, I think, just has a little bit more experience, and I think that going against the Blazers, Dunn is necessarily just another wing body to kind of throw out there to be a defensive weapon, where I know where Fleming is too, but I feel like the confidence in Dunn with Jordan Ott and same with those two Godaro is just a little bit higher just because they have that more experience regardless of the stats. I feel like that's kind of how this team has been run from the beginning. Like, personally, at the beginning of the year, I didn't think Royce and Grayson were going to be this integral to the rotation. I thought they'd eventually fall out and potentially the Suns would look to use them as trade bait. But this season kind of proved wrong with how great they have been in the rotation for this team. And similar things kind of trickled down with, like, why Oso gets so much more minutes, people complaining for Mala Watch. I just think experience matters a lot to Jordan Ott in his rotations. And I feel like that's kind of the big thing. And then speaking about the coaching staff as well, I like how you brought up the Jordan Ott mad scientist thing, because I would definitely agree with that. I know that I watch a lot of Celtics games, but he kind of reminds me of like Joe Mazzulla, right? Like, he's a coach that's all about analytics and for the best advantage for the Suns team and trying to do the best, regardless of what rotation it is that he's throwing out there. He's trying to do the best to what he thinks is going to win and help the Suns, regardless of what the outsiders think, which I really like. And I think a big bonus of that is his assistant coaching staff, which we've kind of seen throughout the years kind of materialize with like former players now kind of getting in there as well. And the Suns have two former players in their assistant coaching staff in Damari Carroll and Mike Muscala, which I think allows them to kind of really benefit from those kind of styles of play. Like Damari Carroll kind of being that defensive menace all throughout his career and kind of really buying into that aggressive play style, I think really helps those guys like Fleming, Dunn, and even Brooks to kind of understand to be those better players, even Jordan Goodwin to understand like the identity and the mentality that this team wants to run on the defensive end. And I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what it was with Dunn. You go with the guy that's just got more experience in the field. One thing so far I'll say about that is he doesn't seem anti-rookie. This is not a Steve Kerr.
It's not a Chris Finch.
What's his face? Who's now with the Hawks?
Kuminga.
Kuminga. Yeah, and he's like, oh, we're a competitive championship.
Chris Finch is one of the worst.
Like, I think Ott has given these guys opportunities, especially Fleming and Mile to Watch. And I think he just kind of realizes, hey, what's the better story here? Kind of forcing, trying to speed up their development maybe a little bit, or let's go make the playoffs. We got rid of Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal, and we're better. And we talked about that all season long, about how much fun this team's been, and I think that's been the alignment of the whole organization. Is let's go out and shock some people and have some fun doing it. And I expect Mile to Watch and Fleming to get a lot of love in the offseason, a lot of attention. Ott doesn't come across to me as like a guy that's going to be like, no, just more Wiley vets. Like, I don't understand these young guys today and their music. Like, Ott seems like a tactician. Like, wait a minute. If I can play this guy, I think we're going to have an impact on the game that they might not foresee. And let's just, because I'm dying to talk about it, I'm going to lean right into that with the Warriors game and talk about how the Suns played Haywood Highsmith. And I was even looking this up last night, Bruce, because I was so excited to talk about this with you. The man, 8 minutes and 23 seconds. He had 0 points, but he had a rebound, an assist, a couple of steals. And here's a guy that played 7 regular season games, averaged 13 minutes. He played one game in April, and it's an elimination game. And Coach Ott says, hey, Haywood, go piss off the Warriors for 10 minutes. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, man. Haywood Highsmith.
That was so much smarter than when I keep blanking on his the name, the coach that took us to the finals before Vogel.
Monty Williams?
Monty. Remember when he played Abdel Nader in the playoffs? We're like, what are you doing? He isn't playing months. Like, stop it. Play Frank Kaminsky if you're going to play somebody. But this seemed a lot smarter. This did not seem like, hey, Haywood Highsmith's dating my daughter. This, the fan theory was for Coach Monty with Abdel Nader. This seemed like, wait a minute, I've got tools in this bag. Let's use them.
Yep, and I really liked the way that they have used Highsmith this year. I know he obviously was a late season signing and was kind of more for next year, as Gambo has alluded to for this team. But he's kind of come through and delivered for the Suns in a lot of ways. I know, obviously, in this Warriors game, he was really good as that like small ball five, kind of disrupting the Warriors' kind of offensive flow, forcing a lot of turnovers, kind of being able to play that body on Draymond Green, allowing them to kind of have that little mirror match. But versus the Celtics game, the one that I was at for Brightside, he was also very effective for the Suns in a different role, where he was like a three and D catch and shoot scorer for the Suns team. I think he provides a lot of versatility for what this squad needs. I do think that his injury him rehabbing from this injury that he had at the beginning of the year has kind of set him back a little bit, because there was, I believe, a quote where like he said he came back a little too early. That's why he had some rest kind of towards the end of the season. But if he can be ready to go for this Suns team, I think you explained it perfectly, Jake. He's kind of a secret tool kind of hidden in our toolbox, right? Where maybe it's like underneath the little like compartment. It's just like the hidden tool. And the Suns can kind of bring him out and kind of use him whenever they
want. He's that guy where you're like, I didn't have any pockets. And he like reaches into his suit jacket and he's got like an inside pocket. He's like, oh, look what I got for you.
Exactly. Exactly. And he's just going to be able to, I think you said, and I've said, do a lot of different things for this Suns team. Like if they need him to kind of be that disrupting small ball five, they saw that it worked in a smaller lineup versus the Warriors. I mean, I think the Thunder are going to go a lot bigger in size, but I think they could kind of use that in some small ball lineups against the Thunder. If they need some rebounding in size, they can use him as that power forward, you know what I mean? Incorporating him in some of those minutes. And I think also he can provide a little bit of help on offense as well. But yeah, in this Warriors game, he was like the perfect kind of spice level to throw in there to kind of change everything.
Oh, yeah. He was the first pepper to the soup. Yeah,
for the Warriors, because they definitely were not expecting Haywood Highsmith 5 minutes, and that kind of disrupted their offensive flow.
Totally. Last quick touch on the Blazers game, because I looked this up before I got so excited to talk about Highsmith. But so Scoot Henderson played just about 17 minutes in that Blazers game. He's 6'3". Drew Holiday is 6'4", but he's a big body point guard. We've known this for a while.
I thought he was 6'5". He's
6'4". Yeah. I mean, maybe he shrunk in Portland. Of course, you know, it's different sea level. But he's a stocky guard. Shaedon Sharpe is, I believe, also 6'4". Everyone else that played on the Blazers is taller than that. They're 6'5 and above. They played Donovan Clingan. They played Robert Williams. They played Jeremy Grant, Tumari Kamara. That's a lot of size. And the Suns didn't go as small as they did against the Warriors. But I do think it's interesting because I view the Blazers a little bit more power ball versus, you know, in terms of using the size and using the strength. Whereas I think the Thunder, Hartenstein can kind of do that. But Chet Holmgren is so thin that he's more DeAndre Ayton, because it has to be, fadeaway jump shots. Like, he'll still do really athletic plays, but I think there's guys like a Highsmith, Royce O'Neal can frustrate a Chet Holmgren because they're stocking, they get into his chest. And so it'll be interesting seeing it with the Blazers, our small ball against just too much size. And then against the Warriors, who had some degree of size. They were playing Gui Santos and Draymond Green are not like skinny, frail guys. They're sizable dudes. But it was effective. I remember putting out a tweet. I was about ready to freak out a little bit when I saw that we had two guys out there. I'll just call them our center and power forward in those moments. Royce O'Neal and Haywood Highsmith, 6'5", 6'5". It's for a moment I thought we were playing Iowa high school basketball with that size. We were extremely small. It didn't last the whole game, but it did last a significant portion of the game. It seemed to work. I was actually surprised. We went small and the Warriors, and unlike the Blazers were like, we're doubling down on the size. Like, you're going to go small, we're going to punish you. Warriors, I don't know, did Porzingis get hurt? Because he played twice as many minutes against the Clippers that he did against us. They played him only 15 minutes. And I was surprised by that. They tried to, like I said, they left Draymond and Gui Santos in. But, like I said, bold choice. I was freaking out when I saw how small the Suns were. I was like, I think I'm taller than those guys out there.
Yeah, I know Kristaps went into the game with an ankle injury, so he was listed as questionable kind of going into it, then was ruled available to play a couple hours before, and then I think he re-aggravated it or tweaked it in the game because he was seen to be, like, limping and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of came into play. But, yeah, Porzingis for the Warriors, I mean, in those 50 minutes, he was actually pretty solid for them. So if they could have gotten more out of that, that could have been a little bit scary for the Suns. And I mean, this game overall, I feel like you mentioned, like right there, like it came out really hot with the Suns having that first quarter really good. Then the Warriors had the good Second quarter, Suns only scored 17 points. So it was a little bit nerve wracking in the first half there. And then kind of in the fourth quarter, though, is where the Suns kind of really took this one by storm, really kind of, you know, set themselves apart. And even though Curry kind of tried to bring that avalanche back that I was fearing was going to get going.
For that was magic just not show up and it just, yep. He would just launch some shots. And I was like, whoa, it's not working here for you, Curry. He finished with 17 points, 4 of 16, 25% shooting, 3 of 10 from three-point range. Curry might have been the best player not on the Suns. it's amazing to say. He finished with 4 assists, 4 rebounds. Like I said, it was Podzemski, or I'll just call him Pods. 23 points, 10 rebounds. Not a good three-point shooter, but of course he's good against the Suns, 3 of 5 from three-point range. He got a steal, 3 offensive rebounds. It was the non-traditional Warriors players. Draymond Green had 5 points, 2 rebounds, 6 assists. It was everyone else on the Warriors that were keeping the Warriors in this game. But, yeah, it was very much we punched hard, they punched back. Third quarter, we just, like, they would punch and we'd counter punch and we just kept them off our backs. And then eventually they finally ran out of gas at the very end. And Draymond Green is a weirdo. It was, whoo, man, the high I was getting from watching that game last night. It was a fun game to watch.
It was. I love to see, we can go back to the Jalen Green discussion, because he was just absolutely torching this Warriors defense and was, like you mentioned, shot hunting, finding his threes. I know a lot of people were like cringing watching Royce O'Neal take some threes last night. I will say that that's usually how I feel when Jalen Green kind of gets in these ISO sections.
Yeah,
some of those, you know what I mean?
Green shooting it than Royce anymore.
Same. Yeah. But last night
you
it was
saw,
kind
you
of.
You see
the,
Royce a couple times, like look at like the teammates, be like, "Why aren't you guys passing it to me? I was open there again." Like, granted, he finished, I think, 3 of 10, but he started hitting them late. So I think he's like, "Guys, I'm hitting them again. Feed me."
Yeah. But like a game like that, like I was expecting the reverse to happen. Well, that was not something to expect. Yeah. Jalen Green, just efficient shooting as well. Like you mentioned, 14 for 20 from the field, 8 for 14 from 3-point range. He had 2 steals, 3 blocks. It's not like he was just getting energetic on the offensive end, but on the defensive end, he was locked in. And I feel like that's kind of
interesting because his reputation is one of the worst defenders.
Yep. And I feel like with this, it may be just because the Suns, play style, their tempo kind of fits in with him, because he has been really good on the defensive end this entire season from what I've seen so far. I really like how he can use his aggressiveness to force a lot of steals, similar to like Jordan Goodwin, Dylan Brooks, but it's because he's so fast, he can get downhill so quickly. It's basically guaranteed points for the Suns every single time. Yeah, this season he's averaging it's a shorter sample size, but a career high in steals at 1.1 this season. I mean, he's gone up every single year. Last year he was at 0.9, but I think that's really good growth to see out of a player in Jalen Green. And in the last eight games that he actually suited up in, he got only 2 of those games he didn't have a steal. So like he does get them. And some games he gets multiple steals a game, and that could be really a huge swing factor there for them. So yeah, I feel like his defensive goes a little bit unnoticed, but in this game it was very, very prevalent alongside his offensive style as well.
This game, yeah, was a Jalen Green, you know, just last 2 games really, but this game obviously, you know, getting the win with it. Green has a chance to exonerate himself from last year's playoffs.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the #1 doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
This playoff series, I'd say he's already exonerated himself to a degree, getting us into the playoffs after missing 50 games roughly. and in the regular season. And I shared kind of in a group chat last night, you know, thank you, Houston Rockets. You guys thought Jalen Green could not be the offensive weapon you rely on. Okay. We don't rely on him, but if he can be the second option, maybe that's going to be phenomenal for him. Dylan Brooks came to us and decided he also wants to be a better offensive player and not just a defensive antagonist, but we still get the defensive antagonist. So we get a quality guy there. And then we got Malawach, who I think is going to continue to develop into a very good center. You know, will he ever be a starter? I think he could actually very much, you know, be a starter in this league at some point. I definitely don't feel like – I remember at one point, this dates me, but I was like, Alex Len is the future of the center position. And how quickly we were just like, no, he's after like a year and a half. Really, he's clearly not supposed to be a center in, or starting center in this league. So I feel like the Suns, a buddy of mine who he follows the Suns because he likes to talk hoops with me. But I think growing up, I think he was like a T-Wolves fan, as a lot of us were in Iowa, just because you were either a Bulls fan or you were excited about the Timberwolves. But Timberwolves weren't any good, so it was easy to kind of be a free agent, as I tell people. And he goes, wow, looking back at this trade, Suns didn't make the playoffs with Kevin Durant. They get rid of him, and now they're better and they're in the playoffs. The Rockets win fewer games. And yes, they made the playoffs, but they're not. What seed were they last year? One or two?
Two.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, it was funny because they were actually asking Draymond Green. I missed this in the post-game interviews, but they're like, you know, what do you think about it? I'm like, I kind of don't really care about Draymond Green's podcasting analysis on, but it kind of felt like that. Like, hey, you just lost the game to the Suns. Do you think it's Kevin Durant's fault? And it's like, wait, why are we asking him those questions? But he's like, no, Kevin Durant is a phenomenal player. His team just did not fight hard enough to get into the playoffs last year. I think that could be true. We just didn't have, you know, I know Nacho wants to say it's Beal's fault. Maybe there's something to be said for that. But I think there was a lot of things going on with that team last year. But this year, it's just kind of we've hinted at it a lot. But team chemistry is a real thing. It's an intangible. It's a, do you want to go out and play hard and dive for the balls? And we didn't see that last year. It was like, all right, just give it to Kevin. Let's see what he can do. I don't know why it still isn't clicking yet. And this year it's like, hey, Jordan Goodwin, you're on a minimum contract. Do you want to be a star? Hey, Colin Gillespie, you're on a minimum contract. How would you like to set the franchise record for most three-pointers made? Hey, Haywood Highsmith, you've played seven games this year. You want to help us not get eliminated? It's kind of a did you ever watch did you watch Stranger Things at all?
Yes.
Okay. Are you also familiar with the old movie Goonies?
Yes.
Okay. It's kind of got a vibe like that where there's a cast of characters and everyone's playing a role and getting to be a little bit of a hero in it. And that's that's why I mentioned last night Jalen Green was playing the role of hero after getting just missing a lot of shots over the last 10, 15 games. And we were kind of getting down on him. Gotcha. How is it not Beal's fault? I don't. It's not all of his fault. That's all I'm saying. But no, I feel like that when you have a team or like the Goonies or like in the Stranger Things cast, like they all kind of want to support each other versus like, all right, that's our hero. We all just got to kind of wait for him to do something. And that was the Kevin Durant show. And so that's my rant on that, is that we have a more of a team chemistry deal. Ott seems to believe more in the players. So he'll give guys opportunities. He'll throw out a Ryan Dunn after he's been super streaky and be like, hey, give me 9 minutes. Give me 5 minutes of effective play. What can you do for us? So, I mean, do you think that's what it is? Just a totally different culture shift that shows why we were being successful?
Yes. And I think it's been stated since like the beginning of the offseason that this was the plan. Like when Matt Ishbia hired Brian Gregory and when he hired Coach Jordan Ott, I remember watching those press conferences and that's what they stated. They stated they were going to build this culture, build this identity, build it from like the top to the bottom, and build players that are going to actually want to play on both sides of the floor. And they really, really recognized that. And they said they were going to have a hardworking team. And a lot of people laughed at that, right? A lot of people looked at that and were like, oh, the Suns are just talking out of their ass. They're just going to be a bottom feeder. This is hilarious. You know what I mean? Not many people expected them. I remember like talking to a lot of my friends that don't do Suns in doing predictions for them before the season. And a lot of my friends had them 12 seed, 11 seed, maybe some of them 13 seed. The highest some of them would have it was like 9 or 10. And like, I felt with my bias, putting them at 9 or 10 was like a little bit of a risk. You know what I mean? But I had to do it. But the fact that they were able to over exceed all of those expectations is just a chef's kiss. And it goes to, I really think that, like you said, the construction of this team and how they were able to find these guys. Like Jordan Goodwin was a late season waiver pickup when the Lakers decided to cut him. And like you mentioned, he has reinvented himself for this Suns team to be a key role player, not only for the Suns, but for any team around the league, right? Like the Suns now have to be worried that with Jordan Goodwin in free agency, if he isn't as loyal, that a team could price gouge them and offer Jordan Goodwin a huge contract just because of how good he has been playing this year. And guys like Dylan Brooks has really felt that mold. Haywood Highsmith this season has really felt that mold and will for next season. Even Jamari Bouye, who was a two-way signing that was kind of just, you know, some guard injury depth, really shined in some moments and looked like he could be
Jamari Bouye.
My guy, Jamari Bouye. But like going back to like the Kevin Durant teams, I feel like they were built around the stars and it wasn't really like, we got to let this guy do this, but they just didn't have like the integral pieces just due to how their salaries and the team was structured. Now with the team being, you know, smaller salaries, a little bit more depth pieces and stuff like that, they can kind of go in and kind of figure out who those pieces are for this team. And I think for next year, it's going to be even better. Cause like you mentioned, like Jordan Knott, I don't see being like, all right, now that we need the playoffs, we need to sign 35-year-old Kyle Lowry and 40-year-old Eric Gordon to be on our team to play some veteran minutes, right? They're gonna let those young guys develop and kind of push their way through and see, you know, maybe in a year and a half, even though Grayson Allen has been so effective, he is a contract that is tradable for this team. And he is someone that the Suns could use to get some maybe draft picks or a younger piece or maybe an additional star if they trade multiple players with him to kind of build around this kind of new core that they have. But overall, I think that, yes, the team has overexceeded expectations, and it's definitely been because of the way that this roster has been built on connectivity and fighting hard and working on both sides of the ball because – I mean, Cody Martin was that connector last year. And we all know how crazy we get Cody Martin, but Cody Martin's not on the team this year. Whereas all these players that are on this Suns team that are in this rotation, at least look like they'll be on an NBA roster next year because the Suns got rid of the two guys that weren't in Nigel Hayes-Davis and potentially Nick Richards.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to Jordan Goodwin because I'll be honest. I did not know what he was doing. I saw a lot of effective plays, but it reminds me a little bit, his play last night reminds me of like prime Sean Marion, where it, all of a sudden the game's over and we won and I'm like, oh wow, you know, Green went off, Booker had a solid game, you know, the Highsmith approach was really wild. Let me tell you about Jordan Goodwin. He played 34 minutes, was 7 of 11 shooting for 19 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, 6 steals, 4 offensive rebounds. Jordan Goodwin was all over the place, apparently, just doing everything for us. This is a minimum contract guy that we were like, oh, maybe we should have gone with Butler at the very beginning of the season. And instead, in an elimination game, he is playing huge minutes, over 34 minutes in this game to get this done. What a story. And I think you're right. He's definitely playing way more than his minimum contract. What's going to be interesting is Mark Williams was not able to play in this game. He seemed high spirits after the game. He was teasing Jalen Green when he was getting the post-game interview, and he showed up and you know, was like hanging out with him and, you know, clapping on him a little bit. It doesn't look like a guy that does not expect to play in the Thunder series or that was like hobbling out. But Mark Williams has played more games than ever before. But I wonder, has his price level come down a bit? And Colin Gillespie, has his price level maybe come down a little bit to where you could throw a mid-level exception? I assume we would have that to a Jordan Goodwin and say, hey, like, let's go 10, 11, 12 to Gillespie, and let's go, you know, 12 to 13 for Mark Williams, and let's do a 5 to 6 for Goodwin and see if that would actually be acceptable to all parties. I mean, I would say it's worthwhile to go after all three of them. Do you think it's possible?
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be possible. I'd have to do like the math and stuff like that. Like, I don't know, like, salary cap sheet. I know the Suns, I believe, are over the salary cap, so they might have to get back into the first apron to do so. But I mean, being in the first apron is kind of fine if you're a competing team. I feel like the Suns just wanted to dodge the aprons and just get out of the Bradley Beal hellscape now because they were too deep into it. But now that they've kind of stuck in this money trenches, they're just going to just deal with whatever. Matt Ishbia doesn't really care about paying the money. So I think they will eventually bring all three of them back. I just do think that his price has definitely risen a little bit. To your point about Gillespie and Williams, I definitely think that their prices have lowered a little bit as well. And I know a lot of people have talked about, like, should we bring back Mark Williams? Should we not bring back Mark Williams? I mean, like you said, he's played the most games this year. He's been the healthiest he's been, and he's still a solid big, right? Like, he's not the game-changing big, but he's the big that everybody thought Nick Richards was going to be last year when he was traded to the Suns that could fill in for that starting role and be solid. And I think that's kind of what the Suns still need, with still looking at whether Oso Ighodaro can still be very, very solid, because as much as I love Oso, I don't think he's a starting big in this league, so I think you still need to have another one. And still with not wanting to rush Malawach or put one of them into a situation that is really going to, you know, limit their growth and potential, I still think you kind of need Williams on this roster. So I would say probably like 12, 13 for Williams, maybe 15 if you want to overpay. And then with Gillespie, since they have his early bird rights, I think they can get him at like a solid deal at like 9 or 10. So I think that would open the floor for Jordan Goodwin to get somewhere between the $5 to $8 million range if the Suns are going to do that. And like you mentioned, 19 points last night. One big thing for Jordan Goodwin this year has been his three-point shot. That was kind of his catalyst in his first appearance with the Suns, was he couldn't really shoot off the ball, couldn't really create his own opportunities. Now, after his Lakers stint, where he was pretty good as an off-ball creator and scorer, he's kind of still been able to carry that over with the Suns. He's had a little bit of a streak in the middle of the season where he did go cold, but towards the end, he started to pick it up. And when he's having games where he's making three or four threes, that can really, really swing the Suns' offensive favor by 10 to 15 points if you got guys like Jalen Green or Devin Booker putting up 20 or 30 points, right? So I think that really, really benefits that. But also with that, this is the defense and his hustle. 4 offensive rebounds, 9 total rebounds, and 6 steals last night. The man was just everywhere. Like you mentioned, he's the definition of heart and hustle, grit, grind. Very, 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 very deserving of winning that Dan Majerle Hustle Award for this season. I think there's no better representation that you could get. And he led the team in rebounds, which is just crazy to see. So, yeah, when you're doing stuff like that.
That also tells you again how small we were.
Yeah. When you're doing things like that for this team, especially like you mentioned, on a minimum contract, you have to get all the flowers in the garden. And I think he's really – I think if there's one player on this Suns team that's not Devin Booker, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, that has had this, like, fan-bought-in story, it's either him or it's Colin Gillespie, and I think that they're both very deserving of it.
Mm-hmm. No, Goodwin has been incredible this season. He's like what we always wanted – Josh Okogie to be. Josh Okogie couldn't hit threes when he was left wide open, it seemed like. And Goodwin decided, hey, you guys like Josh Okogie because he actually tries to rebound the ball. I can do that too, while also being a menace on the perimeter. So he Megatron it. He's just like, I'll work on the three, I'll do rebounds like a Kobe, and then I will do my hustling grind defense that they were both known for. And that's why Goodwin is starting And it'll be interesting. I would not doubt that they also start him in the Thunder series at some point, if not for the duration of the season.
He had his best game versus the Thunder too. I believe he had a career high in threes. It was the one game where the Suns beat the Thunder this season, was led by a Jordan Goodwin 6-point, 3-point night. So I think he's going to have a big performance here in this series coming up, like you mentioned, where he'll be in that starting rotation. And I like that he can kind of be in the starting rotation. He can be within the bench guard lineup with Colin Gillespie. But if either one of the guards are struggling offense, he can kind of simply come in and add to that team with not really taking away too much, because he's not going to need the ball in his hands, and he's going to provide and help out in areas. Like if the Suns are getting attacked and are struggling and one of their guards aren't scoring when they're getting attacked on defense, put Jordan Goodwin in and boom, you solve that problem right then and there.
Real quick before we move to the Thunder series and talk a little bit about that, tips off tomorrow. I'm kind of surprised I don't get like another night off. That's a little bit brutal in my opinion, but that's why you want to get a better seed than we ended up getting. We would have had a little bit more rest, but I will say, so Draymond Green, first off, I like Steve Kerr. I liked him when he was with the Suns as the general manager. I thought he was pretty good. Very knowledgeable guy. What he created in the Warriors and with Steph Curry and Klay and Draymond and built the dynasty, very impressive. He is the ultimate, whatever my players want, I'm going to back up and reinforce. He knows his team's older, and so he's always, oh, you know, we should play less games. Dude, Steve Kerr, you were on the Chicago Bulls where nobody was taking games off, especially Jordan. And so what's this like, oh, we should play less than 65 games, you know, we should, or, you know, bring it down to 70 games. So I'm like, come on, man. Like, I get that you want to be a total team player. Draymond Green coming up and hard fouling Booker so that he can get out of the game and foul himself out, and then continue to run his mouth, and then get tossed out of the game and all this stuff. Draymond, like, I don't know. Like, I used to put Dylan Brooks in the same category as Draymond. I don't know if I can. Draymond's obviously going to go down as a Hall of Fame player and an elite defender. He was bothering Book in this game a little bit. Multiple titles to his name. What a jerk. It's just no way to say it any other way. Just like, I was like, why do you have to go out that way? And I love somebody actually wrote an article. They go, like, Draymond Green may have like ended his career with the Warriors in like the most Draymond Green way. But like this guy, like, dude, you lost. Just lose at that point. Don't. It's not about you.
Yeah, I was just laughing when he got ejected, because I was just like sitting in my bed, just enjoying this nice game. And then I like looked down at my phone real quick, and then I looked up and I just see like he's just getting tossed. I'm like, And then
did you see him walk past the general manager, Mike Dunleavy, who's just like,
Like you mentioned, the classic way for Draymond to go out. I don't think there's any better way for it to happen. It's just like, and of course, Scott Foster, too, is like the official of this game. Like, oh, yeah, got to have my moment. See you later. Bye-bye. Like, it's just, I think the play-in couldn't end in a better way with a Draymond Green ejection and follow-out, because I think that really sold the state of the Warriors and where they kind of are at this point. And I feel like that was kind of their kind of perfect finish. I'm also so ecstatic, and I know you are too, that Matt Ishbia did not trade Kevin Durant at the trade deadline last year, because we would have gotten Jonathan Kuminga and Draymond Green in that. And I mean, yeah, you could argue that maybe that team is still good, right? But there's no Dylan Brooks. Our Dylan Brooks is Draymond Green, and I don't know how well this team is really looking. It'd be definitely constructed differently. It would be a little bit of a weirder sense, and I'd rather have Dylan the villain than Draymond, whatever he, the podcaster. I'd rather waiting for the end of the season so he can podcast, waiting for the end. He's going to enjoy going on TNT or not TNT anymore, but going on NBA and talking with all the, with all his friends.
He's going to take over for like a Barkley and a Shaq when they retire.
Yep.
Yeah. I think he'll be very comfortable there. I'm glad to not acquire him. So he's got a player option. I assume he's going to accept it. But supposedly I was reading that he wants an extension.
They're not giving him an extension.
He's also admitted that he knows that like he'll be a tradable piece. And I'm just thinking to myself, if I'm any team, because there's a lot of talk about the Warriors trying to go after Giannis, this year and in the offseason. If I'm the Bucks, I'm not touching it because Draymond's going to be part of the deal. And I guarantee you, Draymond showing up in a non-competitive Milwaukee, you are going to get the worst version possible of Draymond Green. The, like, constant text, doesn't want to play, fouling guys, like, stupidly, can't wait to get home and podcast, and, like, he'll just take his paychecks and go. Like, if I would view him as a toxic asset that's only valued, is with the Warriors. Like, I think he would keep playing hard for Curry and Kerr and for the franchise. I think if he goes anywhere else, he's just going to be like, all right, time to put money away in my savings accounts and investments. And, you know, and otherwise, like, he's not going to try and do it. He's not going to impact winning anywhere else. I think he's going to have a bad attitude. So, that's my final take on that. It'll be interesting to see the supposed end of the Golden State Warriors area. I kind of think they go one more time. I mean, Jimmy Butler would come back next year. Moses Moody comes back next year. Maybe a healthier Porzingis, Curry, Draymond. You could have a starting lineup of Curry, Moody, Butler, Porzingis, and Draymond Green that probably wouldn't be super great, but would be interesting enough on paper to make it look competitive. So, all right, but let's fast forward. Quick snapshot as we hit the full hour mark. The Thunder. We've talked a little bit about this, who we want. We wanted the Spurs, and not by much of a margin because we don't really think we're going to be able to win. I'll ask you what Michael P. was asking a little bit earlier. Since Suns are not expected to beat OKC, there's no pressure. He should play the rookies. And King Nacho, hey, Fleming and Man have more experience winning than Oso and Dunn do because they have more experience losing. what do you see? We don't have to get too deep in the analysis. It's all going to be revealed to us by tomorrow. But what do you want to see in this approach and with the Thunder series?
So I want to see them blitzing Shea. And I want Jordan Goodwin on Shea 24/7 because I think that is going to be probably the best way the Suns can limit him is throwing Jordan Goodwin, throwing Jalen Green, trying to do what other teams have done to Devin Booker, to a player in Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Now, obviously, Thunder have a lot more other scorers. They got Jalen Williams. They can work in Chet Holmgren. They're going to find ways to score, but I think eliminating Shea Gilgeous-Alexander out of this offense is probably the best way for the Suns to really capitalize on this game. Another thing is also going to be the three-point shooting because OKC is actually a kind of middling shooting three-pointing team. So they're going to have games where I think they're going to be cold from three-point land. And when that is the case, the Suns have to make sure they are hot from three-point land to at least make sure they're competent in these games. Because if they're both teams are struggling from three-point land, the Thunder are just going to obliterate the Suns by attacking the paint, scoring using their big men. And I feel like the size of Hartenstein and Chet Holmgren is going to be a real problem for the Suns here in this series. I have the Thunder in five just because I do think the Suns will make it competitive, and I had no sweeps in my playoff predictions, so I think that each team has a fighting chance to win at least one game. But I think, obviously, as most fans, unless they're maybe a little delusional, are believing that this is kind of the end of the road, which is, I mean, still a successful year compared to mm-hmm. where the team was last year and for where we thought they were going to end up.
Mm-hmm. I think this is going to sound like a duh, but I think the Suns win two of the first three games. it gets real interesting real fast. I think if we steal the first game, I think Vegas doesn't care.
Yeah.
I think they would be like, the Thunder will still destroy you. I think if we win the first game, maybe lose the second, and then win in Phoenix, all of a sudden that betting line is going to really shift. The Thunder will still certainly be favored, but people are going to be like, what's happening here? I think if we can't do anything in OKC in the first two games, there's really not a lot we're going to be able to do. How about this for a team comparison? Points scored, field goal percentage, free throw percentage, three-point percentage, assists, total rebounds, fewer turnovers per game, block shots per game, and assist-to-turnover ratio. Thunder lead in all categories. We lead in one category. Three-pointers made, 14.8 to 13.8. But it's at 36.1% versus 36.51%. I think Grayson Allen's going to be important in this series. He was apparently available. My guess is more like available in case of an emergency, break glass. My knee is still not 100%. So hopefully an extra 48 hours of rest gets him where he needs to be to be able to launch a few. I think our small ball front is going to be able to not really affect Hartenstein so much, but like I said, Holmgren, that's kind of what I want to see. The free throw merchant, it's funny that SGA gets, even Dylan Brooks said it in the Prime coverage, which, by the way, Amazon Prime, and not just Amazon Prime, but I can't knock Prime.
Peacock, your favorite.
Oh, Peacock. Well, that's going to be coming up. But, yeah, one, Blake Griffin does not need to do every single commercial and broadcast. He doesn't need to do the Wings and AT&T, and there was a third one he was doing, too. Like, and then also do like the studio coverage. That was a little wild. But Dylan Brooks talked a little bit about, yeah, they have a free throw merchant. They go free throw hunting in OKC. There's not a lot that I think we're going to be able to do to SGA. Jalen Williams, I think it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. I think you're right. I would expect more Goodwin on SGA and Brooks on Williams. But to my knowledge, the Thunder look completely healthy for the most part. If you look at the injury report, they're still rolling out what happened 9 days ago where they rested basically everybody against us. So I'm expecting all of those guys to be fully healthy all of a sudden. It's not up a hill, it's up a mountain, this series. But I think there's going to be some fun things that we can do. And if we can take one game out of OKC in OKC, that's when we're really going to, it's kind of like, I might have to do a little bright side article. It's like, here's another movie reference for you, like Rocky IV, Rocky versus the Russian. And it really only starts when Rocky takes a swing and hits the Russian Drago and cuts him. And then he gets back to the corner and he goes, did you see? You cut him. That means you hurt him. He's a man. He's not a machine. And so that's when it starts, okay, he can be beat. But until the Suns get one, it's just going to look like we can't do it. And so that's where we're going to be. It's going to be very difficult, but I'm with you. This has been a fun season. It's a win regardless. We're playing house money now. Let's go out. Let's have some fun. Hopefully Brooks plays smart and doesn't like get teed up and taken out in a game and be like, come on, man. Like, let's give ourselves the best shot. Michael P, that's why I'm going to lean away from the rookies, because even though we're not expected to win this series, I would want us to put our best foot forward to in these first few games. If we're down 3-0 and we're going into a fourth game in Phoenix, okay, let's try everything. Let's throw Fleming and Milowatch out there for 15 to 20 minutes. But hey, I think, yeah, if we steal this first one, because we're a little sharper and they're a little rusty with so much rest, then it can get a little fun. Then we can start playing some mind games. If Jalen Green can stay as hot as he's been,
yeah,
it could be fun. I will say this. You gave your playoff predictions Let me ask, do you go into sports betting? Have we talked about this before?
Occasionally. I had a future bet this year on my, because I did a finals prediction. So I was like, oh, I'll bet on these two teams that I think are going to make the finals.
You said Celtics all the way. Tatum's coming back.
No. Luckily I still have the bet alive, but I have the Denver Nuggets coming out of the West, which at the beginning of the year I thought was pretty good, but I have the Orlando Magic coming out of the East. So I don't know if that one is going to really
hit. They spanked the heck out of poor Hornets.
Yeah, I mean, unless the Magic just have this like Miami Heat run of a couple of years ago where they can just wake up the demons and kind of make it to the finals, we could see that. But the beginning of the year, that was my predictions. Now, at this point, it is the Celtics versus the Thunder. That is my prediction.
That would be one heck of a finals watch. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously nobody comes here for betting advice, and otherwise we'd probably have to put a disclaimer that, you know, get help or something like that. Either. So, I'd say take everything with a huge grain of salt. But I'm really curious. The only lower seed that's favored right now is the Rockets against the Lakers. That's because Luka's out. I think maybe could come back. I doubt he's going to come back in the first series if they even survive. And then Austin Reeves, they basically ruled out for the whole first round series. If the Lakers steal game one, watch that line drop a bit and go after the Rockets, because I don't expect the Rockets to drop that series under any circumstance. I think LeBron could have some magic, but right now the line's so stacked. For the Rockets. The only other one that comes close, and I know Voida teased me a little bit. He's like, yeah, you don't know what's going on. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on, and you're not telling me either. But the Knicks series, Knicks are favored over the Hawks, but I think it's the tightest series that's not favoring the lower seed. Do you know much about this Knicks-Hawks matchup that would make you think? I mean, the Hawks have been kind of hot. I know that. But the Knicks are – I'm surprised to see they're not super low. I mean, you're still risking quite a bit to try and win with the Knicks. I just don't see the Hawks beating the Knicks. Do you?
I could see a reality where they do. I'm just very confident in the Knicks, I think, ability to be playoff ready. And I think that the Knicks are really, really looking forward to this rematch versus the Celtics and kind of going in a full deep playoff run with Mike Brown. So I feel like they will be able to overcome the Hawks because of their front court and their size with Mitchell Robinson and Karl-Anthony Towns on Onyeka Okongwu. But the one thing that the Hawks do have is they have Nickeil Alexander-Walker and Dyson Daniels, who I expect will have the major assignment of Jalen Brunson. And if they could eliminate Jalen Brunson's offense from this Knicks team, I do think the Knicks will struggle to kind of find a way to kind of combat that. I do have the Knicks winning in seven in my predictions, but I do think that the Hawks do have a chance to kind of make it interesting. But I am shocked that it's the closest one, because I would think that the Nuggets Timberwolves.
I think that one
screams the closest. That one I truly still think is a 50-50. Whatever one you take, I could see winning. I don't think that there's like a clear like decider out of that series. And I think if you like played it 100 times, it truly would come down to like 50-50 or 51-49 for one respective team.
I think what's interesting about the Nuggets T-Wolves is obviously it's going to come down to the best player, and that's
Rudy
Gobert. Anthony Edwards as a third option can sometimes win you games, but I wouldn't want to rely on him. So I still expect the Nuggets to be able to pull that out. You heard me right. I don't buy into Ant. He's not the future. No, it's going to be I'm excited for some NBA playoff ball. That is for sure. I get more excited about this than March Madness, which I know is like a lot of hoop fans are just like, no, come on, man, March Madness is so much more fun. But I'm all for the pro game. I'm weird like that. Well, hey, we went a little past time. We often do, but yeah, cool things to talk about.
Yeah, so,
I'm
just so happy that they won. I was so fearful last night that they would lose and would come on here and would have to be like, well, guys, this was an utter disappointment.
You can't put it all on You knew he's streaky, and would you trade him in the offseason?
Yep. And that's a weird thing, too. Sorry, I'll just mention this a little quick, but I don't know if you saw this, but there was, like, the rumors of the Ja trade to Phoenix over these last couple of days.
Was there confirmation that Ja was in the arena?
And then someone posted that he was in the arena, and I saw one of the reporters repost it. So to me, that showed that it was that he was there. And I've been seeing online that him and Dylan are really good friends still from their Memphis days. So it would make sense. But the tradable piece is Jalen Green. And like,
well, exactly. I think it would be weird to look too far into it. Clearly it's to welcome him there because we're totally making this deal right. I like, if Jalen Green is willing you into these wins and taking you to the play, I don't think you just automatically be like, no, we've already committed to this trade.
So it's a little weird. I could see the benefits and the negatives. I feel like they're both kind of very similar player for this Suns team. It's just more that Ja is a traditional point guard, so it would alleviate Booker from being that true point guard, whereas they're technically both shooting guards, so yada, like that whole discourse. But ultimately, I think that that conversation might happen in the offseason, and maybe we should save it for the offseason, but one to kind of monitor, because it was a weird situation to see kind of transpire yesterday.
Yeah, we send Jalen Green for Ja Morant, and then we send Royce O'Neal and Grayson Allen to the Pelicans, and we bring in Zion, and we get our power forward that we need, and we just go deep into that draft class. Ja Morant, Booker, Zion, who's here for it? Not us. All right. Planeteers. You can follow me at Fallen Founder. Obviously, I'm tweeting a little bit more because these games mean a little bit more. So follow me at Fallen Founder on Twitter. Bruce, read down the resume.
Yes, sir. You can follow me here, Bruce Velez, where I'll be tweeting about the Suns games. You can also check out my Bright Side of the Sun for some articles. I did an article this week talking about three Suns who overcame expectations this season, and one of them shined last night in Jordan Goodwin. So if you missed that, check that one out. And then you can find me at 8 Points, 9 Seconds as well, writing about the Pacers. The Pacers season is now over, but that does not mean that the content stops. They still have the potential to get a top four pick. So a lot of interesting things going on with the Pacers next year. Maybe you'll see some Suns Pacers trade articles over there as well in the future. So definitely keep that in mind. But those are the places you can find me.
All right. King Nacho, I'm down for getting rid of Oso and Dunn for Zion. You heard it here first, Pelican fans. We got a deal for you.
Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, stay with us as the Suns get set to shine here on their home court.
Here's Perry, the guard hurt. Here's the jump shot. Good! It's good!
Al McCoy with you, courtside.
Pumped up a three.
Shoots down! He ties it!
A-D-A, Allen, Tim up here. Oh,
happy birthday!
Here's Cameron Payne out on top. Durant, three-pointer straight away.
I just want to take this opportunity to thank everyone in this arena this afternoon, to all of those that are watching and listening on radio and TV. A thank you for allowing me to tell the story of the Suns for 51 great years.
That pretty much wraps things up here. And for one last time, this is Al McCoy saying thanks for being there. Thanks for being with us tonight. And from the Footprint Center here in downtown Phoenix, we'll just say so long for now.